The Genesis Communications Network is sponsored by the U.S. Money Reserve, your exclusive source for gold and silver precious metals. Visit them online at usmoneyreserve.com.
Welcome back to the Paracast, the gold standard of paranormal radio. And now, here's Gene Steinberg.
Gene and Chris on the Paracast, we're talking about silver screen saucers with Robbie Graham. We also want to talk about After the Paracast, our other radio show. We want you to hear the show because it's kind of a special thing that if you're a Paracast listener, you'll really dig. And to be able to download the show and listen to it, you have to be a member of the Paracast Plus at plus.theparacast.com, P-L-U-S dot theparacast.com. The Paracast Plus, we also give you the ad-free version of this show with more features. We're talking here about Close Encounters of the Third Kind. The military evidently didn't want Steven Spielberg to make it. And by the way, one of the kids in the film was played by someone named Justin Dreyfuss, who is Richard Dreyfuss' nephew.
Yeah.
But unfortunately, he doesn't have much in the way of credits. I think he has only one more credit as an actor, like 10 years later in another film. It doesn't matter. So now a lot of rumors came about after Close Encounters of the Third Kind that this was really an effort by the authorities to convey the message that we were being visited.
Mm-hmm.
And that may, to some degree, have been true. But what you're saying sounds like they wanted to be as far away from this movie as possible.
First of all, those rumors were actually that they were circulating even among the cast and crew of the movie whilst it was shooting. And that was evidenced in the Close Encounters diary that was written by Bob Balaban, one of the actors in the movie, that was released shortly after the film's release in 1977. You know, Balaban recounted a time where they were all sitting around a campfire, basically, in Alabama, late one night after a hard day's shoot. All the cast and crew were there, and Jalen Hynek was delivering a lecture on UFOs. Someone talked about this rumor that had been going around, that the film was actually part of an acclimation process to, you know, to get us used to the idea of, that we're not alone in the universe, and that there's some kind of government sponsors of the film, and absolutely nothing to corroborate those rumors at all. But as we know, the Air Force and NASA did deny their cooperation. At the same time, playing devil's advocate, just because the Air Force and NASA deny their cooperation does not mean that, for example, the CIA or other shadowy agencies don't have an alternate agenda where these films are concerned. Often these agencies work, you know, towards competing agendas, and they're very self-serving, and often they don't communicate. So, and certainly when it comes to UFOs, there seems to have been a history of the CIA not sharing information with the Air Force and vice versa. And that's just not just UFOs. I mean, that's just across the board, which is why these agencies are so ineffective often as a whole. You know, that's why society and politics is so chaotic, because there's a lot of miscommunication or non-communication between agencies. So that doesn't discount the idea that someone somewhere could have had the idea of seeding it, but it's not. The point is it's just not necessary for them to have done that, because Steven Spielberg already had the material here. He already had the will and the desire to make this movie. He had the budget to do it. He didn't need funding from the CIA. He had funding from Columbia Pictures. He was going to make this movie because he'd already made the most successful film of all time 2 years prior. This film was going to get made, and Spielberg was the man to make it. And if it did further some shadowy agenda on the part of some agency somewhere, then I think that's entirely incidental. You know, Hollywood is first and foremost a business. It does what it wants, except when it doesn't, in the sense that there have been examples over the years of censorship and seeding and kind of bringing scripts in line with preferred images of certain agencies, and that refers to the relationship between the Department of Defense and Hollywood, which is very strong and historic, where you have the Pentagon working closely with filmmakers across the board on all sorts of genre pictures which depict the military
in a positive, brave, freedom-fighter light.
Precisely. And some of those cooperative efforts also extend to the UFO subgenre as well. So those are the films that I'm particularly interested in, films like Battleship, Battle Los Angeles, the Transformers franchise. All of these films have received full cooperation from the Department of Defense, and all have had their scripts tampered with to a significant degree. And that, of course, raises questions then about the extent to which these films are manipulated ufologically, because those scripts are heavily ufological.
And you also have the curious parallel with the 2004-2005 Serpo claim that's been promoted by none other than Richard Doty and Ken Caston, who we've repeatedly asked to be on the show. The Serpo scenario sounds like what happened to the astronauts at the end of Close Encounter, who were taken aboard the ship, briefed, you know, blessed, and then taken.
Yeah, people go on about the Serpo stuff. So the Serpo stuff is crap. I mean, it surfaced in a string of anonymous emails, essentially, and this is 2005, so this is decades after Close Encounters had been made. So what's more likely, you know, is it that the Serpo story was influenced by a Hollywood movie or vice versa? The fact is that these emails and the Serpo story didn't emerge until decades after Close Encounters. Logical assumption is that they were influenced by a movie. There's absolutely nothing whatsoever to corroborate that story. It's entirely absurd.
We also have the pop culture sort of almost archetypal view or kind of vision of what a flying saucer is. To this day, that 50s kind of sort of primitive conservative view of the phenomenon is reflected in thousands of photographs that have been hoaxed over the years, including the infamous Billy Meyer shots, the Adamski shots earlier on. And we're still seeing that today in the kind of the send up to the show here. I mentioned that that's one of the easiest ways for a UFO analyst is to look at the photograph, and if there's a resemblance to some of those pop culture images, you can almost discount it.
It's not quite that simple because, of course, the description of the archetypal flying saucer predates Hollywood's realization of that. So you had these very clear descriptions of the archetypal domed flying saucer and even the movements that they make in Air Force documentation from the late 1940s. So before the flying saucer movies were even made, people were reporting across the world.
Yes, but I'm talking about angular motion, the dome or the bottom leading in the direction of travel, which is how most of these, if not all of these objects move. Whenever you see a video or a photograph of an object allegedly moving edge on, you can pretty much discount it. And that comes from one of the top analysts in the field who's been studying this for over 50 years.
Well, I mean, I discount all modern photographic evidence of UFOs. Just put it all in a big bag and throw it out the window because it's entirely pointless and it's a huge distraction. I'm only interested only peripherally interested now in photographic evidence that predates the digital era because that's harder to fake. Anything in this digital era now is so easy to fake for the layperson. You can do it on your iPhone that you can waste your whole life trying to analyze still and moving images of UFOs. So much is uploaded to YouTube on a daily basis. Some of it is probably real, so to speak, in the sense that some people have captured a genuine unidentified flying object, but a lot of it is obviously hoaxed. And it's just a huge, huge distraction, and it's so easy for people to do. So my position is just you are never going to get – if you're looking for proof of a real mysterious phenomenon and you're looking for a smoking gun, it will never, ever come in the form of photographic evidence.
Digital photographic evidence. There's some very good film and still images from the analog days that that those babies out of the bathwater.
Which is what I was saying. Earlier photographic imagery is genuinely interesting. Some of it is really, really powerful and convincing, especially when you can look at it and some of that has been some of that footage has been captured in the presence of multiple witnesses. But even the ones that haven't been captured in the presence of multiple witnesses, it's still very hard to fake UFO footage, some of it particularly convincing footage, in those earlier years. And of course, it is possible to fake it, obviously, but it's much more interesting. As I say, now it's so easy to fake that the logical position has to be that we just have to ignore it all. Because unless, of course, the footage is taken today in the presence of 500 people who all then are named and then give their testimony to support the authenticity of the footage. As I say, we live in a visual age now, where everything is real and unreal, and it's this age of hyperreality. And in that age, you are never going to get proof of UFOs, certainly in photographic evidence. And I would argue that it's very hard to get universally acceptable proof of a phenomenon in this age at all, in any form. Because even if you were to have so-called, official disclosure, as it's conceived by the likes of Steve Bassett and Stephen Greer, even if that were to happen, you would still have half the world's population totally disbelieving it.
Let's break here. Let's break here. Robbie Graham with Gene and Chris. You're in
the Paracast.
Do you need a website? Well, you can get a great deal on hosting services with Namecheap's legendary coupon code. They're offering substantial hosting discounts on shared hosting, business hosting, VPS hosting, reseller hosting, and even dedicated servers. Namecheap is preferred by millions. It's backed by a money-back guarantee. Use the coupon code LEGENDARY to cash in on this special deal at Namecheap.com, Namecheap.com.
First came Attack of the Rockoids, and it was a critically acclaimed success. And now there is The Coming of the Protectors. A former military intelligence man is contacted by a space woman in a dream. A dream that turns out to be a nightmare, because evil forces on her distant planet are planning to conquer the Earth. This is gripping science fiction of the classic kind. Attack of the Rockoids and The Coming of the Protectors. Find out more at Rockoids.com. That's Rockoids, Rockoids.com.
Hi, Peter Picaro for ParanormalDate.com. Are you looking for love in all the wrong places? Now you have a chance to change that by signing up for free at ParanormalDate.com. This incredible dating site puts people of like minds together. People who are interested in the strange, the unusual, mysteries, ghosts, UFOs, and the afterlife, and so much more. ParanormalDate.com was developed for you, people seeking a viable alternative to the other dating services. You can join for free by going to ParanormalDate.com, and if you decide you like it and want to connect with people, use the code GEORGE for a substantial discount. Mark Rawlings, president of ParanormalDate.com, says so many people hunger to share their experiences about the paranormal, the unexplainable, or the afterlife, and so much more, and this is the source for them to meet and share that common interest. So sign up for free at ParanormalDate.com. ParanormalDate.com. And use the code GEORGE if you decide to connect with someone you like.
Paid non-attorney spokesperson, Adam Pulaski of the Pulaski Law Firm with principal office in Houston, Texas, is the attorney responsible for the content of this ad. This ad is not legal advice, and the choice of a lawyer should not be based solely upon advertisement. Services may not be available in all states.
Attention Xarelto users. If you or a loved one took Xarelto and suffered a serious bleeding event, you may be entitled to financial compensation. Xarelto is a popular prescription blood thinner used to prevent blood clots and protect patients from strokes. These serious bleeding events have led to numerous cases of hospitalization and even death. Phone lines are open 24/7. Call 800-261-0937. That's 800-261-0937.
Hi, I'm Dr. Joel Wallach, veterinarian and naturopathic physician. The Dead Doctors Don't Lie guy with an important message. Take charge of your health. Do not continue to blindly follow the system that has failed us all. I appreciate GCN listeners because you're open-minded and intelligent. If our system is so great, why is it that the United States, the USA, ranks nearly 60th worldwide in longevity and number one in obesity? All the while we spend more money than all the other countries combined annually on unnecessary health care procedures and toxic drugs. It doesn't take much to get on track. Not with the government or pharmaceutical companies, but rather you in control of your own health with a basic understanding of nutrition and supplementation. FDI Longevity has the finest quality health, sports, and energy supplements available. GCN listeners are invited to join our team of people who want to stay healthy well into old age. We are currently looking for specialists to represent FDI Longevity and save America. To buy products at wholesale prices or join our business team, go to GCNteam.com. That's GCNteam.com. Support GCN. Get healthy.
Serious investors and traders want to make 81% return in 60 seconds? Use the same secret algorithm professional hedge fund managers use to make billions of dollars of profits. Turn $250 into $4,903 in just 7 clicks of a mouse. Our tool is so simple that my 82-year-old grandmother can use it to make insane stock market profits. Go to BigBuckRiches.com. Watch the free video before the hedge funds make us take it down. Go to BigBuckRiches.com. From the Robert Allen System, current returns not indicative of future results.
We'd like to hear from you. If you have a comment or question about the Paracast, send it to news@theparacast.com. That's news@theparacast.com. And don't forget to visit our famous Paracast community forums at forum.theparacast.com.
Now, Robbie, I wanted to get back to something here just related to what was going on earlier. The movie Close Encounters of the Third Kind. Did Spielberg ever think of maybe doing a sequel where we see what happened to the Earth people who went on this foreign exchange program? And then we notice, as he progressed, he did E.T. the Extraterrestrial, where we have the childlike friendly alien. And then we have later on where he remakes The War of the Worlds about evil aliens. So, but let's start at the beginning here. Did he ever think of a sequel to Close Encounters?
As far as I'm aware, Spielberg never really considered a sequel to it. What he did do is he released the director's cut, a special edition, in about 1980, just a few years after it was originally released.
He was almost forced to do. He didn't want to.
Yeah, he tacked on this really crappy ending where you saw inside the mothership, and you know, of course, the appeal of the original movie was that you see Richard Dreyfuss go onto the mothership, but you don't see what's inside, and so it's left to the imagination. It's about you fulfilling your own fantasy, essentially. And that was part of the brilliance of the movie. And he completely ruined it with a special edition where he showed the inside of the spaceship, and that just kind of shatters the illusion. It's like, oh, yeah, it's a spaceship. So Spielberg regretted doing that. When he did E.T., actually, he did think about making a sequel to E.T., and some information about this has come out over the last few years. And E.T. originally was going to be a very different movie. The film that Spielberg originally had conceived of was not the cuddly one that we know today. It was actually going to be loosely inspired by a real ufological incident from 1955, the Kelly Hopkinsville kind of farm siege invasion of as I say, of the mid-1950s, where you had the family who were besieged by so-called little imp-like aliens, and this was a, you know, a famous case at the time, and that was the case that actually gave rise to the Little Green Men term in popular culture. So that was going to be an influence on the film that would later become E.T., but it wasn't until Spielberg brought in his friend Melissa Matheson, who was the girlfriend at the time of Harrison Ford, to write the script for she said, look, this should be about this, and then it was very, you know, so what actually it came to be realized was quite different from what they had originally conceived. So it's basically going to be more of a horror film. And then they did conceive of a sequel, which again was going to be more of a scary horror film. And that never came to fruition, thank goodness, because it would have been terrible, I think. But then
And one other thing, too, Spielberg actually wanted Close Encounters to be his first major film, but he couldn't get funding for it.
That's right.
Because Jaws seemed to be such a slam dunk, obvious choice, and you know, the resulting success then gave him the cachet and the Hollywood clout to go ahead and get Close Encounters made.
That's right. He was, as I say, he was obsessed with the subject. This was a cathartic movie for him. It was kind of welling up inside him throughout his childhood and teen years. As I say, the very first low budget film he made was a UFO movie, and then he did some TV work, and his first feature film was his first TV movie was Duel in the early 1970s, and then he made The Sugarland Express, which was his first feature film, which kind of was critically acclaimed, but was not a success at all financially, and then finally had huge success with Jaws in 1975, and then that allowed him, as you say, to fulfill his dream of making his UFO movie, which was Close Encounters. You know, he even wouldn't budge on the title. You know, he was determined to call this film Close Encounters of the Third Kind, a phrase at the time that was not known to the general public, and it was an explicitly ufological phrase that was coined by Jalen Hynek in his classification system for UFOs. And so Spielberg, you know, was insistent on calling it Close Encounters of the Third Kind. This really worried Columbia Pictures.
Yeah, they said, look, he got some pushback.
Yeah, you know, they said, no one knows what the hell a Close Encounter of the Third Kind is. It sounds vaguely pornographic. Shall we call it something else? And so, but he stuck to it because he had a huge amount of creative power at that point and continues to. And then, as we see over the decades, he's continued to make movies and TV shows about UFOs because, you know, he continues to be interested.
Let's move on to The X-Files. And we think of The X-Files putting in all the UFO conspiracies in one place. But then we have this peculiar aspect of the revitalized X-Files. It came back for a 6-episode run with, I think, mixed success for Fox. And suddenly the UFO conspiracy returns to Roswell, where they did recover alien technology, supposedly, but everything else was a conspiracy by the government, as opposed to an ET conspiracy. Any thoughts about this change?
So the original X-Files series ended in 2002, I think, off the top of my head. And it ran for around 9 seasons, ended in 2002. And, of course, you know, for that original series, Carter and his team of writers, they drew directly, explicitly from various subcultures, and especially the UFO subculture, and almost everything that had been debated in ufology somehow found its way into X-Files. Again, it was an example of Hollywood acting as a parasite towards an existing UFO subculture. And then what happened was that subculture became popularized through the genre of science fiction and the medium of TV. And the you know, whatever facts there were, whatever the truth there was to some of these original reports and debates and encounters was blurred and kind of muddied through the process of Hollywoodization. And now what happened in the interim between the end of the old X-Files and the start of the new one was you had a new generation of conspiracy law, of conspiracy theorists, I suppose. Now, I don't use the word in a totally non-political sense. You know, the word conspiracy theorist has been sown with negative connotations, but what it literally means is people who theorize about conspiracies. And of course, conspiracies are real in the sense that they have demonstrably shaped some history, you know, significantly. Conspiracies do happen, and to theorize about them makes you a conspiracy theorist, but certainly not mad. So what Chris Carter and his guys have observed in the years since the original X-Files ended is a new generation of conspiracy theorists merging different conspiratorial threads into a sort of a unified world conspiracy view. And 9/11 has played a huge part in this, and theories and debates around 9/11, the New World Order and Illuminati and all of these different things, which have started to become much more prevalent in the age of the internet, where ideas are shared more freely and quickly. This started to only arise just after the X-Files had finished. So they kind of missed out on that in the original series. So what you've seen since then is all of these different threads start to expand and merge, and different conspiracy theories come to the fore. Not necessarily different ones, but different takes on old ideas. And what you've had is somehow ufology being mixed with 9/11 and all sorts of different aspects of, you know, MK Ultra, mind control, and so you've got a whole new generation of people who are not only interested in one conspiracy but in multiple conspiracies and in unifying all of these conspiracy theories. And that was of great appeal to Chris Carter for this new series of the X-Files, and that's reflected in the narrative that he spun there. So that's why you're seeing what you've seen in the new X-Files.
Well, I'll tell you, once again, I really wasn't enamored of this. I loved the original series, but I thought, especially the final episode, the 6-episode run, it created the need for another episode, and I guess that will come next year if they can reach contracts with the principal players. I don't know. Robbie Graham with Gene and Chris, you're in
the Paracast.
For listening to GCN. Be sure to visit GCNlive.com today.
Serious investors and traders want to make 81% return in 60 seconds? Use the same secret algorithm professional hedge fund managers use to make billions of dollars of profits. Turn $250 into $4,903 in just 7 clicks of a mouse. Our tool is so simple that my 82-year-old grandmother can use it to make insane stock market profits. Go to BigBuckRiches.com. Watch the free video before the hedge funds make us take it down. Go to BigBuckRiches.com. From the Robert Allen System, current returns not indicative of future results.
Worried about lead, fluoride, and other contaminants in your drinking water? Get a ProPure with the Pro-1 G2.0 cleanable reusable filter and remove up to 200 contaminants. Drink water the way nature meant it to be. Clean, crisp, and refreshing. See the complete line of ProPure products, including the new ProMax shower filter. There's a ProPure for you. Visit your authorized ProPure dealer for details or ProPureUSA.com. That's ProPureUSA.com or 800-544-3533.
I'm Nick Soboleski, a SelectQuote agent with a true story that could save you hundreds of dollars a year. A woman named Linda just called. Her husband, Ray, has a $300,000 group life insurance policy, but is changing jobs and can't take it with him. Well, I impartially shopped the highly rated term life insurance companies we represent and found Ray, who is 41 and takes medication to control his cholesterol, a 10-year, $500,000 policy for under $26 a month. That's almost twice the coverage for less than half of what he had paid. If SelectQuote hasn't shopped for your life insurance, you're probably paying too much.
For your free quote, call 1-800-403-4885.
That's 1-800-403-4885. 1-800-403-4885. Or go to selectquote.com. We shop, you save. Get full details on the example policy at selectquote.com/commercials. Your price could vary depending on your health, issuing company, and other factors. Not available in all states.
Looking for that edge during those intimate moments? We see many ads for enhancement, but the side effects include death. At GCN Team, we should change the Healthy Body, Brain, and Heart Pack to the Healthy Libido Pack. The brain and heart are not the only organs that require a healthy vascular system. For proper blood flow at the right moment, go to GCNteam.com or call 877-878-4203. That's 877-878-4203. That's 877-878-4203.
Are you worried about your mom or dad living alone in their house? Hi, I'm Joan London. Listen, I know how difficult it is to find senior care for someone you love. That's why I recommend a free service called A Place for Mom. They are the nation's largest senior living referral service. Call A Place for Mom today.
To receive free information on senior living communities in your area, call A Place for Mom at 1-800-704-6182.
A Place for Mom offers free one-on-one advice from local advisors and a personalized list of senior living communities you can visit. If you have questions about senior care for your mom or dad, there's a place for answers, A Place for Mom.
Call A Place for Mom in the next 10 minutes to get your free ebook on financing senior care as well as free information on senior living communities in your area. Call 1-800-704-6182. That's 1-800-704-6182.
December 7th, 1941, a date which will live in infamy.
Remember Pearl Harbor. Now you can buy, for the first time ever, the 75th anniversary Pearl Harbor legal tender solid gold coin from the U.S. Money Reserve. Call 1-800-329-6700 right now or go online to usmoneyreserve.com. 1-800-329-6700.
Hey, this is Marie D. Jones, the author of This Book is from the Future, and you are listening to the Paracast, the gold standard of paranormal radio.
With Gene and Chris on the Paracast, Robbie Graham, we're talking about silver screen saucers, which also includes your TV screen, silver or not. Chris?
You know, since we were talking about conspiracies, Robbie, in the last segment, there's a couple, three questions on here. We sort of touched on the subject of possible government involvement behind the scenes, or maybe more overtly, with the UFO subject. But Dave M. wants to know, how closely is the UFO topic in Hollywood movies and TV controlled by government agencies such as the CIA? And Mulvaney wants to know about your view. And he'd be interested to know how you view possible links between Hollywood and the CIA or other covert propaganda that may be manipulating public perceptions of UFOs. And, of course, then there's the obvious follow-up question of if they are, to what end?
Yeah, that's the harder question to answer. What we can say definitively as a matter of historical record is that the CIA and the Department of Defense and various other branches of officialdom have historically had a close relationship or a very strong interest in Hollywood. For obvious reasons, because they recognize that Hollywood shapes popular perceptions of our world on any subject. Hollywood fills the gaps in our knowledge of the world, was what the film director Ken Russell once said, and that's a really profoundly true statement. Hollywood fills the gaps in our knowledge of the world. It really is true because Hollywood serves to narrativize and contextualize the events and debates and processes that constitute our frustratingly non-narrative world. You know, life rarely makes sense, but movies usually do, and we take comfort in that. But the problem is that, you know, movies aren't real life. They're reflections of it, they're snapshots of it, and they're skewed and distorted through the ideological framework of the people who've made them. But we take them on some subconscious level as being representative of the world in which we live. So that's problematic, especially when it comes to something like UFOs, as I say, because that's already rejected from consensus reality, and we don't really know what to believe about UFOs. And in the absence of solid facts, we are forced to believe one thing or another, because all we have is belief when it comes to UFOs. Even the people who've experienced UFOs directly in a profound way still themselves don't understand what they've experienced. And that's been my experience of speaking to a lot of people who have had these experiences. They've experienced something, it's profoundly affected their lives, but they themselves are struggling to make sense of what they've experienced. And so they filter their experience through pop cultural channels because that's the easiest thing to do. And there are no explanations forthcoming from officialdom, so therefore you have to look elsewhere for answers. And so when it comes to the CIA, for example, the CIA has been involved in Hollywood in a covert capacity since the early 1950s, and they were involved in monitoring and seeding the narratives of a whole host of genre pictures, westerns, melodramas, you know, musicals, comedies, throughout the 1950s, 60s and beyond. And they were really bringing scripts in line with the CIA's preferred image of the United States, and they were trying to project a particular image of America and American foreign policy to foreign audiences. So there's numerous examples of this, yeah. And there's
John Frankenheimer,
right? And but I mean, in the 1950s, the head of censorship at Paramount Studios was a guy called Luigi Liraci, and he was actually a CIA asset. This wasn't known until decades later. It was uncovered by a British academic, but at the time you had, as I say, so you had one of the key, most influential people in Paramount Studios actively working for the CIA to bring scripts in line. Now, of course, it's safe to say that if these changes were being made to all sorts of genre pictures on what you would think would be fairly mundane issues, then it's probably fair to say that these changes were also being made to the UFO subgenre, which was a hugely popular, you know, that kind of dominated the science fiction genre at the time. But when it comes to definitive examples of CIA manipulation of early UFO products, it's hard to state anything with certainty because the CIA is notorious for not leaving a paper trail. They consciously, you know, have nothing on paper, so as to not kind of give their illegal activities away, because they're not supposed to operate on American soil. So the CIA in the early, as I say, it was covert. It wasn't until the mid-1990s that the CIA started to work openly with Hollywood, and they established a media liaison office. And what they did was they started to create relationships with Hollywood producers, directors, writers, and they encouraged Hollywood to, where possible, depict the CIA in a more positive light. And the goal was to increase recruitment and retention of personnel. But at the same time, this relationship also opened the doors to script manipulation and general monitoring and manipulation of these movies. The relationship between the Department of Defense, the Pentagon, and Hollywood is different to the CIA in that it historically has been more open and continues to be more open and more brazen, shall we say. When I say backed, I don't mean financially, although it does essentially equate to that, because, you know, if a filmmaker requires tanks and troops and hardware for their war movie or their action movie, they have two choices. They can create it in a computer or through the props department, which costs a lot of money, or they can approach the military, who will give it to them for free on the grounds that the military themselves can then insert themselves into the production and influence it and gear it towards recruitment and propaganda.
Now, this was nowhere near as blatant as it was during World War II, where there was direct involvement. They even had Hollywood stars appear in movies designed to encourage patriotism and support for America's military effort. For example, I saw this one movie featuring the late Superman star George Reeves, where he plays a soldier who was captured by the enemy and bravely goes to his death.
Mm.
And this was supposed to say, okay, no matter what happens, look at this patriotic American who gave his life for his country, that kind of thing. Superman, for example, speaking of Superman, he fought Nazis during World War II.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it's the same today. It's even more brazen, I would say. If you can bear to watch movies like Battleship or Battle Los Angeles, the Transformers franchise, you know, these are uber patriotic products, jingoistic even, and the dialogue is so awful, and you might think, why is the dialogue so awful? And that's because, you know, a substantial chunk of the dialogue has actually been written by Pentagon staffers. that's a fact. What they do is they reserve the right to see every draft of the script, and they have their own staffers go through with a pen, and they highlight anything that they deem to be objectionable or that in any way might paint the military in an unfavorable light, And then even beyond that, they can even, you know, see a representation of a particular issue which is of interest to them, like national security or foreign policy, and they can suggest alterations there as well. So they'll highlight the problems, and then they will write dialogue for the, you know, for the production and say, we recommend that you use this instead. Now, the filmmakers then have the choice of saying, no, we won't do that because it's crap and we want to make our own movie, in which case the Pentagon reserves the right to say, okay, you don't get our hardware anymore. So the point is that once they enter their contractual agreement with the Pentagon, basically they're signing away their creative rights to their movie, and they really have to follow any suggestion that the Pentagon puts forward at that point once they've signed that contract.
Well, especially if they've requested help with airplanes, you know, any sort of vehicles, that sort of thing, the inclusion of footage from bases, that sort of thing. So they do kind of sit in the driver's seat. But I'll tell you, you talk about bad Hollywood scripts. Almost every major Hollywood movie that comes out now, with very few exceptions, feature, you know, one-word answers, three-word questions, grunts, you know, as responses. And it seems to be dumbed down to the lowest common denominator in terms of the cultural languaging. It just, to me, it's I don't know.
That's just a cultural trend, I think. It's the same, you know, these films are all about spectacle now, especially in the age of special effects, and, you know, dialogue is secondary to image, and to kind of really overt spectacle, and, I don't know. I mean, I agree. I mean, that most of what comes out of Hollywood in terms of so-called blockbusters is, to me, almost unwatchable.
Well, I won't get into Batman v Superman at all. By the way, I'll give you the spoiler. I'm going to do it. I don't care. They kill Superman at the end of the movie, but he'll be back in the next movie. We got Robbie Graham with Gene and Chris. You're in
the Paracast.
Thank you for listening to GCN. Be sure to visit GCNLive.com today.
Graphic Converter is the image manipulation tool for the rest of us. It does not use any database. You get full control of all your files. Want to view the images of a folder? Drag it into Graphic Converter and a powerful browser opens up to show your image files. You could use it for slideshows. You could use it to import images from digital cameras or from scanners. Need to do some image editing? You can do that too in Graphic Converter. Also, print catalogs. Convert from so many formats I can't even list them. Download now to see if Graphic Converter is good for you, like 1.5 million other users. Guess what? You could save money when you buy Graphic Converter. Use the coupon code Night Owl. Use the coupon code Night Owl to get a special price for Graphic Converter. Go to LemkeSoft.com. That's LemkeSoft.com. LemkeSoft.com. LemkeSoft.com.
Serious investors and traders want to make 81% return in 60 seconds? Use the same secret algorithm professional hedge fund managers use to make billions of dollars of profits. Turn $250 into $4,903 in just 7 clicks of a mouse. Our tool is so simple that my 82-year-old grandmother can use it to make insane stock market profits. Go to BigBuckRiches.com. Watch the free video before the hedge funds make us take it down. Go to BigBuckRiches.com. From the Robert Allen System, current returns not indicative of future results.
This is Dan Pilla. Do you owe the IRS money you can't pay? Are tax debts crippling you? I've defended people from the IRS for over 30 years. I've helped thousands, and I can help you too. I wrote the book on IRS settlement, and I'm telling you, there's no such thing as a hopeless case. Call 800-34-NO-TAX to finally get free of IRS debt. With the IRS's new programs, there's never been a better time to solve your problem. Call 800-34-NO-TAX. That's 800-34-NO-TAX or my website, danpilla.com.
Owe $10,000 or more to the IRS?
Get on board with the Tax Admiral! Don't pick on the IRS alone! I'll cut penalties and reduce your overall tax bill sometimes! I can even get it zeroed out completely!
We're an A-rated company helping people clean up their mess with the IRS.
If you owe $10,000 or more, then call the Tax Admiral!
Call 800-287-7180. Again, that's 800-287-7180. 800-287-7180.
This is a healthcare alert from the Pain Relief Hotline.
If you, a family member, or a loved one suffers from knee, back, shoulder, or ankle pain and have Medicare as your primary insurance, we've got great news. You don't have to suffer any longer. You can immediately qualify for a pain-relieving brace at little or no cost to you by calling our 24/7 pain relief hotline at 866-389-0620. Delivery is free and all paperwork is handled for you. If you are on Medicare and have knee, back, shoulder, or ankle pain, don't wait. You can qualify to immediately receive a pain-relieving brace at little or no cost by calling our 24/7 pain hotline now at 866-389-0620. Our representatives are standing by 24/7 to take your call and rush you your pain-relieving brace at little or no cost to you. Shipping is free and all paperwork is handled for you. Just call 866-389-0620. That's 866-389-0620. Again, 866-389-0620.
This is David Cordani, CEO of Cigna. For more than 20 years, Cigna has worked with the March of Dimes to address premature births in the U.S. Premature births cause horrible suffering and cost billions of dollars each year. That's why Cigna is committed to raising funds and awareness through our employees, family, and friends to improve the health of moms and babies. Please join us in supporting the March for Babies. Start your team today at marchforbabies.org.
Hi, it's Grant Cameron from PresidentialUFO.com. You're listening to the Paracast, the gold standard of paranormal radio.
Okay, with Gina and Chris, Robbie Graham talking about silver screen saucers. Now, when we're talking about military influence of movies, particularly sci-fi, UFO-oriented movies, etc., what about 1996 Independence Day? Because there's a lot of military presence there, but they also visit Area 51, where supposedly they're holding aliens on ice and they have a flying saucer. Did the military at all get involved in that movie?
They did not. Well, what happened was the producer, Dean Devlin, approached the Pentagon for their assistance on the movie for obvious reasons, because it, we've just talked about the reasons that filmmakers approach Hollywood. They requested the assistance of the military, and the military said, they read the script and they said, well, we've highlighted a number of problems with the script. Some of them were unrelated to UFOs. Some of them were just general points of accuracy or inaccuracy. But the sticking point, they said, was that, look, we cannot assist you if you don't remove all references to Area 51 and Roswell. They said those are the sticking points. And, the filmmaker said, well, we can't remove references to Area 51 and Roswell because they're central to the narrative. So to their credit, the filmmakers went their own way without the Pentagon, and they made everything with special effects. Now, what happened there was that the Pentagon missed out on a huge opportunity to propagandize and to recruit. And they watched this film become the most successful film of the year and one of the most successful films of the decade. And now it's about to spawn a sequel this summer. What they realized there was because they denied their cooperation on ufological grounds, they missed out on a huge opportunity to propagandize. So I think what happened following that was they had a sit down at the Pentagon or at the Hollywood liaison office in Los Angeles, and they said, look, we really need to rethink our position on Hollywood's engagement with this subject. Basically, they sat down, I think, in Los Angeles, and they made the decision to be more open to Hollywood filmmakers when it comes to depictions of UFOs. And so you had this flat-out denial of cooperation in 1996 on Independence Day. But then the following year, you had full cooperation granted to the TV production of Stargate, the TV show Stargate, which ran for 10 years, SG-1. And that show, rather, received the full cooperation of the Pentagon and of U.S. Space Command. And so, obviously, there had been some kind of a conversation where they said, we have to end our decades-long policy of non-cooperation with UFO theme productions if we want to, one, propagandize more effectively, but two, if we want to have any input at all in Hollywood on how filmmakers actually depict a subject which we ourselves historically have been interested in and have a historical engagement with, then we need to actually insert ourselves into these productions, and therefore we need to be more open to we have to just say, look, we don't care that it's about UFOs. In fact, we want to be involved because it's about UFOs, and therefore we can actually manipulate popular perceptions of our historical engagement with this phenomenon. It's not about, you know, as far as the Department of Defense is concerned, I don't really see any agenda to acclimate or to sow a particular message other than, and this is a clear message that you can identify across Pentagon-backed UFO movies and UFO-themed productions over the years, very clearly. What you see is these scripts, which have been partially written by Pentagon staffers, they depict a United States military which is historically oblivious to UFO reality. So the militaries and governments in these, or especially the militaries rather, in these productions, such as Battle Los Angeles, Transformers, Battleship, they don't have a historical involvement in a UFO cover-up. So when the aliens arrive and invade Earth, the Department of Defense is as surprised as anyone. They've got no aliens in the basement. And in Transformers, so basically they're kind of rewriting their official history when it comes to UFOs. They're saying we don't have an official engagement with this subject historically, and there is no cover-up. So that's kind of the subtext of these films, which they back. But in Transformers in 2007, what you have is a very labored scene in which the Secretary of Defense, played by John Voight, discovers to his horror that a secret quasi-governmental agency, and this is key, not the actual Department of Defense, but a quasi-governmental agency called Sector 7, which is clearly inspired by Majestic 12, has been secretly concealing UFO and alien reality from the president and from the Secretary of Defense himself. And when John Voight, the Secretary of Defense in the movie, learns of this, he's horrified, he's outraged. How can you keep a frozen alien in the basement, blah, 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 blah. And this is so blatantly, you know, in service of the current Department of Defense, you know. And it's interesting that that point, that position is carried through in all of these narratives which are backed by the Department of Defense when it comes to UFOs. They're not really interested in painting a particular picture of the phenomenon itself, other than hostile, obviously, but they are interested in rewriting their own historical engagement with the subject.
So the military, in these cases, they're the good guys, and when policies aren't followed, these are the outliers. These are the ones going rogue. Now, with regard to the sequel called Independence Day Resurgence, the sequel, which is coming out this year, is it the same thing, or did the military cooperate with Mr. Emmerich and Dean Devlin?
You've caught me out here because I haven't caught up that far. It's something that I need to look into. Others may know the answer to that. It's something I will be looking at quite seriously, and obviously as the film approaches, doing some articles on it. I suspect that they may well have approached them. They'd be stupid not to do. But at the same time, they may well have learned from past mistakes and would rather not go through that again. Because military involvement in these films is not essential. These films get made without the military, and often filmmakers prefer not to have to engage with the military on these things because they do have to give up some creative control. So Dean Devlin and Roland Emmerich now, you know, they're at a different point in their careers. This film's going to get made without the military, you know, because it's become a cultural phenomenon. So I doubt there's going to be much military involvement. But I could be wrong. Don't quote me on that. I could be wrong.
Just for everyone's reference, the movie will be released June 24th this year. Mm. Okay. So let's see what happens. And a lot of the original actors are there, except for Will Smith.
Yeah.
But someone is in there who plays the son of the Will Smith character from the previous movie.
He's not in there because he says he doesn't like to do ensemble pieces. Now he's too big.
Well, wasn't then. We have Jeff Goldblum in this movie.
Mm-hmm.
We have Judd Hirsch again, Brent Spiner, who was killed off in the last movie. I can't figure out how they got him back. And they also have Liam Hemsworth, who is the brother of Thor. Thor is Chris Hemsworth. Mm. His younger brother appears in this film. So we'll see. I saw the coming attractions. It seems okay. I had fun with the original film.
I'm sure it'll be very entertaining. I mean, again, you know, if you can kind of forgive the almost ridiculously comical patriotism of the first movie and the jingoistic nature of it, it is hugely entertaining. Roland Emmerich makes entertaining films, very cheesy old school kind of films, but entertaining films, and I'm sure it will be an entertaining movie, and it'll be interesting to see the extent to which they engage with the further ufological mythology, which has evolved since since the last movie, as Chris Carter did with the X-Files. So you know, that's the trend that we're seeing now is as more and more filmmakers are engaging with an existing and richer ufological subculture, and they're consciously drawing from it and being very parasitic towards it, and what fact there is underlying this phenomenon in early reports has just become so it's been so kind of mashed up through this medium that it's very hard to identify the fact from the fantasy now, and that's really the focus of what I do, and it's trying to kind of pull apart these threads where possible, and it's often not possible, but it's I think it's important to try, and I think it's important to engage, as I say, more generally with UFO themed productions as not something that's peripheral to ufology. You know, a lot of people interested in UFOs are interested in UFO movies, but they're not in a direct way. They see them as fluff. They see them as peripheral to the UFO subject and having no real bearing on ufological occurrences or belief or debate. And that's very far from the truth. You know, these films have had a huge cultural impact, and they've influenced us on a subconscious level for decades. And I think that UFO movies and TV shows, UFO entertainment is central to our misunderstanding of this phenomenon.
We'll continue talking about UFO movies, of course, in our next segment. One question being, how have we misunderstood the UFO mystery because of all those films? We'll get into that in a few moments. Robbie Graham is writing about Silver Screen Saucers, and we want to tell you about After the Paracast, our second radio show. And to get the show, you have to join the Paracast Plus at plus.theparacast.com, plus.theparacast.com. Check out all the features. Sign up. It's cheap. You know, like Mad Magazine, our price cheap. This is cheap. With Gene and Chris, you're in
the Paracast.
Thank you for listening to GCN. Visit GCNlive.com today.
First came Attack of the Rockoids, and it was a critically acclaimed success. And now there's The Coming of the Protectors. A former military intelligence man is contacted by a space woman in a dream. A dream that turns out to be a nightmare, because evil forces on her distant planet are planning to conquer the Earth. This is gripping science fiction of the classic kind. Attack of the Rockoids and The Coming of the Protectors. Find out more at Rockoids.com. That's Rockoids, Rockoids.com.
As you know, neighbors, web hosting can be pretty cheap, but not all hosting is the same. DreamHost wins best of awards year after year. You get unlimited disk space, unlimited bandwidth, and even the low-cost plans put your sites on high-performance SSDs. Want to know more about what DreamHost has to offer? Go to technightowl.com/host. Once again, that's technightowl.com/host.
Ted Anderson telling you about Jordan Rubin's Beyond Organic Green Fed Raw Cheddar Artesian Cheese, featuring whole milk created through ancient dairy breeding. Unpasteurized, untreated whole milk on the same farm the cows graze. Containing natural sources of omega-3s, CLA protein, calcium, probiotics, and enzymes. I have never tasted cheese this good, and you need to try it. Contact your longevity distributor or call 877-878-4203 or go to GCNteam.com.
You haven't experienced yogurt until you've tried Amasi, embodying health and flavor in a true whole milk, green-fed dairy beverage. Every sip pays homage to our old-world cows and the ancient culturing methods their milk benefits from. With over 30 probiotics, Amasi's undeniably nutritious, refined, cultured sensation bolsters your health and awakens your passion for dairy. Amasi's so good, and you need to try it. Contact your longevity distributor or call 877-878-4203 or go to GCNteam.com.